Welcome to Diverse Voices Book Review. I'm Hopeton Hayes. Time for our crime fiction picks of the month with Molly Odent, senior editor of crimereads.com, Scott Montgomery, crime fiction coordinator for Book People, and Amanda Moore, who was a lawyer in her other life, but an aspiring crime fiction writer. And welcome, everybody.
It's good to be here.
Hi.
We are recording on Memorial Day, and so we are actually going to get started off with recommendations from each of our so-called panelists here, our co-hosts, and they will name some other books they may be interested in you taking a look at. And we're just going to go ahead and post those in the description of the podcast. But Amanda Moore, we're going to start with you.
Thank you. So this month, I read a really cool book. It's called Breathless by Amy McCulloch. And it is imagine a thriller, but you're in a mountain. You're on the side of a mountain, right? And so this person's a journalist, and she's going, she was promised an interview with this guy who has been climbing like the highest peaks, like 8,000 above around the world. And so he promised her an interview if she would go on the trip with them. And so she's kind of like a intermediate type of mountain climber, like climbing with these elite mountain climbers. And then, as any good thriller, people start to not make it to the top of the mountain under mysterious circumstances. So imagine thriller while you're hiking. And so it was really cool. I enjoyed it. So I recommend.
All right. So I got to jump in here. I think of one movie featuring mountain climbing. I don't remember the name, but the star was Sylvester Stallone. Anybody remembers that?
Cliffhanger.
Cliffhanger.
See, I would suggest, as far as to, there's two other really good mountain thrillers or climbing. The Eiger Sanction, starring and directed by Clint Eastwood, and which is really good. And then, oddly enough, it's a good fun B movie called Vertical Limit.
I liked Vertical Limit. That was cool. That's the most intense first scene I've ever seen in movie cinema. Highly recommend. But it's really cool because if you're not really a mountain climber, a hike in the woods is enough. But, you know, this person's talking about when you get to a point, you have to use oxygen. And then you have people who are climbing without oxygen, and whether or not you use the actual lines on the side of the mountain to get up there, or if you're just kind of free climbing. So you have that type of edginess to it. And I thought it was a cool twist on the thriller, just kind of put it. And I think the writer actually did a mountain climb. So this is experience meet, you know, what if.
Yeah, the author is an elite mountain climber. She wrote a list for Crime Reads about other mountainous alpine thrillers. And as someone who was scared of heights, it was a scary list.
You know?
Molly, I am scared of heights too. I was visiting a friend in Atlanta who was in a corporate apartment on the 24. I went on the balcony and was scared as you know what.
Yeah.
So, Molly, what is your crime fiction pick of the month?
This month, I'm going to go with The Lioness by Chris Bajalian. I hope I'm saying his last name right. This is a historical novel set in the early 1960s, which is one of my favorite time periods because there's so much bubbling beneath the surface in the world in the early 60s. That's like about to explode into the like social changes of the late 60s, but it's like not quite there yet. And in this book, a group of hangers-on and various friends of a starlet. So a starlet gets a bunch of her friends together and they go on a safari. And the safari is a photographic safari, but organized by this guy who used to take people like Hemingway on hunting trips. And because of the fact that this is an environmentalist thriller, the animals eat most of the characters, and it was really satisfying.
Wait a minute.
That's what I'm talking
about. Hey, did you just... So for you, the lying is the protagonist.
Yeah, just like how in that one movie, the bear should have won. What was that movie with the bear and Leonardo?
Are you thinking about
The Revenant? The Revenant.
Revenant. I was cheering for the bear the whole time. It was like really disappointing that Leonardo DiCaprio survived instead.
Well, there are two movies that come to mind. Once again, if you say Lion, the first movie I think of is The Lion King.
Yeah. Yeah.
The one animated here. And when you think of, when I hear hunting, I think of the African Queen.
Oh, I love the African Queen. Yeah, the
Catherine Hepburn, Humphrey Bogart movie.
Which, if you can ever dig it up, Catherine Hepburn wrote a great memoir about her experience working on that movie, because they shot a lot of it in the jungle in Africa. And she talks about like hanging out with John Huston, Humphrey Bogart, and Lauren Bacall, who had just married Humphrey Bogart at that time.
Scott, I'm going to ask you this question. I'm really interested because we've got Molly here. When we bring up people like Humphrey Bogart and Catherine Hepburn and John Huston, you and I are of a certain age. And we readily recognize those names. Amanda and Molly are significantly younger than us.
I've watched movies with Humphrey Bogart and Ingrid Bergman, except, you know, I call them the classics. Of course, now things that I was into, I guess my kids would call the classics. I think the classics changed.
I know you guys have, but I'm going to ask you about your peers.
It really depends. I think there's a lot of like, similar to the obsession with records coming back, there's a lot of cinephiles out there who like old movies. I think that there's, in Austin, this a special love of bad old movies, which sometimes competes with the love of good old movies.
Yeah.
But I really like that combination of the highbrow and lowbrow culture here.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, I was a little disappointed in my daughter, and I guess she may get upset with me. So I asked her, I read the latest Don Winslow novel is based on the Aeneid. So this epic poem written by, I can't remember the name of the Virgil. Epic poem written by Virgil. And so then I thought about Homer and the Iliad. So I go to my daughter. I said, hey, have you heard of Homer? Just, you know, she's 16. She's going to be a junior. I said, have you heard of Homer? Now, to be honest, I'm not sure I heard of Homer when I was 16. I'm really not sure. But, you know, I asked her. She said, I said, all right, do you know Winnie? Do you know? So I said, go look it up.
Yeah.
I just for the record, though, I want to say, because you're saying us of a certain age, knowing Humphrey Bogart, knowing the African Queen, it wasn't like I saw the African Queen when it was released. I'm not that old.
When it was released.
I want that to be.
You're talking about you saw it on Turner Classic Movies. You saw it on
we all watched it on Turner Classic. Or in the
Paradise.
For the record, I'm the oldest on this podcast.
Like on the Channel 11. You know, evening movie, you know, in the 80s. So.
But I have a question. Molly, in this book, like when the animals are, I guess, eating the characters, like, are they talking or showing expression, or is this just straight? They look up and they see eyes and claws and things like that.
Well, it's kind of a, like, the Hollywood people are on this trip where they're like paying an exorbitant amount for all this comfort and having like porters serve them and doing this kind of like ridiculous colonialist thing. And the book kind of sets it up with, they're so privileged, they obviously deserve to be attacked by animals and eaten, which was really satisfying. That was like another satisfying part, the fact that they're like, oh, we brought civilization with us, and civilization to them meant like extreme inequality and colonialism. And therefore, when they all get separated because some men with guns show up who turn out to be like vaguely connected to the Russians. I'm revealing a lot about the plot right now, but I swear it's all worth reading, whether or not you already know part of what happens.
Well, when you say they get separated, that's the hallmark of no, don't ever get separated. So that tells me a lot.
This is the same author who wrote The Flight Attendant, right?
Yeah, he wrote The Flight Attendant. And then last year he wrote this book that was set in the 17th century in Salem. That was pretty good. But I think The Lioness is my favorite of his so far. It was just like a really good use of setting and time period.
Well, let me ask about The Flight Attendant. Is that there's a series on HBO.
Yeah.
Is that based on that series?
Yes.
Is the series based on the book, The Flight Attendant?
Mm-hmm.
The flight attendant in the book is an alcoholic.
Yes.
Yeah.
And gets involved in espionage.
Yes.
Yeah. I like that series. Very good. Very good. So, Scott, I'm going to formally apologize for the benefit of our audience. Scott is significantly younger than me. but not too significantly.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. mildly younger than you.
Mildly.
Mildly younger than you, vastly older than Molly and Amanda. So.
Wow. All right. So, Scott Montgomery, what's your crime fiction pick of the month?
Oh, I am so happy to see this guy come back. Peter Ferris, who wrote a book about 6 or 7 years ago called Last Call for the Living, then really kind of fell out, at least with American publishing for a while. He's back with a book called The Devil Himself. And Peter is in that genre I really love a lot, roll noir. And this starts out, the first chapter basically is this woman who is basically forced to be a sex worker, has escaped from this trunk because these guys are going to kill her because she knows this politician they've been putting her with has a bunch of secrets. And she falls down in the middle of the woods. One of this pimp's toadies is about to, like, basically has the gun to her head, and all of a sudden his head explodes.
Whoa.
And there's this redneck with a shotgun right over, like, above her, saying the only people who does killing on my land is me. And he's this hermit, and he goes, here, I'll take you to my place, be safe. Second chapter, she goes into his cabin, and there's this mannequin dressed up. And he starts talking to the mannequin like it's his wife and has this conversation. And so it's kind of the beginning is, who is she safer with, these people that are coming after her or this person that she's in the cabin with? And I don't think I'm giving too much away when I say that it's these two broken people that have this bond while all of these bad guys are kind of coming after her and he's trying to protect her. And I love it a lot. Peter and I, we got to know each other a little bit when Last Call of the Living came out. And his father is was a really great author, John Ferris, who's probably best known for his book, The Furies. He was a really wonderful thriller writer. But he's also a big movie fan, and we're both fans of director Walter Hill, that's probably best known for the movie 48 Hours. He also did The Warriors. Actually, one of my favorite that I just finally came out on a Blu-ray, Extreme Prejudice. That's the closest I have to a visual thing. And I said something about that he reminds me a lot of the way Walter Hill works. So there's a really wonderful structure of film to it. It works really, really well. And it has a really great pace, but it has that novelist sense of emotion and thematics to it, really, really, it's done really, really well. So I'm really, really happy to see him back. And this is a great book to come back with. So.
Well, in my continuing my steps of always making fun of some of these novels, the first novel, you said Mannequin, Scott.
Yeah.
And so the movie I thought about was Mannequin.
Oh.
The comedy.
I really want to read this, actually. Well, the moment you said the character started talking to the mannequin, I was like, oh, I've got to read this. Oh, that's good.
Yeah. And you find out what that's about. And it's first you think it's weird and funny. And then when you discover what that's all about, it's actually very heartbreaking.
Wow. Did we just get a sound effect unintended?
I know. You.
I just got a text for my friend's wedding that was to the wrong friend. She meant to text her friend that day.
See, that sounds like the beginning of another thriller.
All right. Well, believe it or not, I actually do have a book. Let's see if I can give the prop here. It's called Nobody's Pilgrim, and I am trying to, for those listening, trying to get it on.
There, there it is.
There it is.
More or less, there we go. Yeah.
All right. It's by Sergio Troncoso, and it follows three 17-year-olds who are in a stolen truck, alienated from their families. It starts off in El Paso, two 17-year-olds, one undocumented Mexican immigrant, another one, an unhappy nerd living at home with his aunt and uncle. His parents died in a car crash. They work at a poultry farm. It's the summer. So the undocumented immigrant is asked by someone else that works at the poultry farm to drive with him to Kansas City. He has to make a delivery. And so he agrees. Meanwhile, the 17-year-old nerd, his family, his aunt wants to send them back to live in Mexico. He doesn't want to go back to Mexico. He is actually an American citizen. So he decides to see if he can ride with them to Kansas City. He wants to get over to Connecticut. So they agree. So they take off. It's a road trip. Two 17-year-olds and a 50-something-year-old man driving to Kansas City. But when they're going through the immigration check, the 17-year-old nerd, Turi, sees him, Juanito, hand the border patrol guy money. And he says, oh, my God, what is going on here? Backstory. The poultry farm is owned by a man that is a distributor for a Mexican cartel. So then he decides, okay, we're going to have to steal this truck because this guy is probably going to kill us before we, you know, when we get to Kansas City. They didn't want us to be around. And so they steal the truck, but unbeknownst to them, in the truck is not drugs, but let's just say it's a apocalyptic type of virus that's in the truck that's being delivered to somebody. So they are on the run. They're driving, two 17-year-olds. They stop in Steelville, Missouri. They go to this fish and tackle place. There's a young, blonde, 17-year-old working-class woman working there who is unhappy living with her brother and his live-in wife because his live-in wife hates her, and her brother don't see eye to eye. So she's looking for a way out. So she decides she's going to join them in their trip across country. Meanwhile, the drugs are, the drug distributor, they send people after them to get the truck back. So it's a bit of an adventure story. They're running at first, not knowing they're running from a brutal enforcer and some others sent by the drug czar, the drug distributors, to get the truck back and to eliminate them.
Well, here's my question. Do they know about the virus, or is that part of the...
I guess maybe I revealed too much. So, but they sort of, no, well, actually the author interviewed,
I need to revealed read that it in too.
So yeah, so they're thinking they got drugs. In actuality, it's a virus.
Oh gosh.
That's a lot of attention. Bringing to somebody else in Kansas City. And let's just say it's an apocalyptic novel. So the virus gets out, people do die, but the people chasing after the three 17-year-olds continue to chase after the three 17-year-olds.
You know, I love the different type of conflicts that we have, like in all our selections, is that you have, you know, man against nature and then man against man and then man against himself. And so it's just all these different type of, it's really cool when you see like combinations of that in the books, because, you know, you have to have some type of conflict, but to see the way the authors kind of play with it, I really like that.
Yeah, and the book was a surprise for me because this Sergio Troncoso has a master's in philosophy, a master's in literature, and he had never really written a crime fiction or thriller novel before. So this was his first time going into that particular area, type of writing. And he talked about how to get the pacing right. He had to cut a lot of the backstory out. He had too much backstory. He felt like was slowing down the book. So he cut a lot of the backstory so the pace of the novel would be faster. And the novel was so good, I urgently urged him to write a sequel. I want to know what happens. I want to know what happens next. It was also a little bit of a romance, and actually 17-year-olds, you know, and it's also a look at class and race and you know, the challenges undocumented immigrants face and, you know, how it is to be 17-year-old. She was a high school dropout, you know, who didn't have a lot of future prospects, just young people wanting to do something new, different. They were alienated from their communities, from their families, all three.
Wow.
I love a good, like, young people on the run waiting for society to collapse around them to save them from a different danger. Like, this, that kind of makes me think of this spy series that I read. The first one was called Zagreb Cowboy, but it's about a guy who's like betting on Yugoslavia falling apart because he has a boss who's like after him in Croatia. And so the trilogy is this guy is on the run, the country is crumbling, and you end up in this position where you're kind of rooting for a terrible thing to happen in order for the character to be free.
Oh, wow.
Scott, give me a movie this book reminds you of.
There's the, you know, I know there's a better examples of this, but I guess because there's something hidden in the trunk that's dangerous. And this is from my generation. I keep on thinking Repo Man for some reason.
Yeah, that was Martin Sheen's son. Two sons were in that.
Yeah. And
Emilio Estevez and Charlie Sheen.
Yeah.
Was it Charlie Sheen? Yeah. Was Charlie in that? Or was it just Emilio Estevez?
Emilio and Harry Dean Stanton is the.
Okay. There we go.
Harry Dean's so good in it.
Yeah. And there's, this is terrible. I'm blanking on it. And it was directed by Elia Kazan, had Jack Palance in it. It was in the 50s. And it was Jack Palance and I want to say Zero Mostel. There are these like robbers or killers on the run, but they broke into like a lab that, and they're carrying the plague with them and running through New Orleans. And Richard Widmark is kind of like the health service guy who's trying to track them down and before they spread the plague all through New Orleans and the rest of the country.
Oh, it's called Panic in the Streets.
Thank you. Yes.
And it's from 1950 because Zero Mostel would have been blacklisted for the rest
true,
of the
year.
All right. So let me make this statement. What makes this show so good is the great memories of Molly Oden, Scott Montgomery, and Amanda Moore. Your ability to remember the names of books and the names of movies. So I will confess that the only reason you're on the show is because I have a bad memory. You guys remember everything. So let's do a quick roundtable of some other books that you think you would recommend. Just name an author's name and name a book. And we'll start with you, Scott.
I really like James Rollins' City of Bones, his latest Sigma Force novel. I thought was really fun. If you're just looking for a good, you know, fun summer read, that's really great. You'd mentioned the Don Winslow book, City on Fire. That is one of the best books of the year, kind of a gritty version of The Godfather in a way.
All right, Molly.
I'm going to continue with the annoying white people being killed theme and go with Kismet by Amina Akhtar. It was so good. It takes place at a wellness retreat. It comes out in July, and it also involves some like magical talking ravens. But yeah, every like annoying like crystal lady that you've ever like secretly wanted to just maybe get murdered.
Well, all right. And finally, Amanda.
Well, I read another book by a local author. Her name's May Cove, and she wrote My Summer Darlings, and it is a domestic thriller. And so it's one of those, it has spice. I will warn folks, it does have some spice, but at the same time, it has like what's happening now. So it has three different perspectives and women in the East Texas town. So imagine the soap opera of drama between relationships. And then, you know, a man comes to town and it always starts some trouble. So
good thing we're all adults. We're all over 21.
I have to say, Amanda.
I think spicy is the best way to say it.
Well, spicy is the most. That is, no, it's a lurid at times.
Lurid. Ooh.
And I wait.
Lurid is worse than spicy.
it is a grown folks novel. Okay.
Can I up this to salacious and add one more?
I ran into May and I was talking with her and I said, here's the way I've been describing this. And I said, if you feel offended, tell me. And I said, it starts out kind of as an early 80s Larry McMurtry Texas women's book. And then all of a sudden it's like then it gets dropped into an 80s erotic thriller movie. and she said, oh, that's perfect. That's exactly what I would love to hear people say about it.
So it's a 50 Shades of Grey type of book, Amanda?
she has her own style. I mean, she wrote Hunting Wives. She wrote this book called Big Woods. And so she plays with time frames. So, you know, crime fiction is all types of levels. And the thing is, it's interesting how they've changed the thriller. They put different names in front, depending on what you're dealing with. So the book I recommended for May is like a mountain thriller. I'm sure they probably, Molly, is that the proper way to, I don't know, what would I call it, a mountain thriller, but.
Wilderness thriller, alpine thriller.
Alpine thriller, right?
So your last recommendation is a sex thriller?
Oh, yes.
No, that's your, I say it's my, a thriller
my
by
words.
A local author.
My words.
But here's the question, Hopeton. Here's the question. The fact that there are other folks who've read this on this call. So there you go.
Well, you know what? I always thought it was always interesting that we're afraid of sex, but it's okay to talk about violence.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Yeah,
we're not afraid of sex on this show.
Well, not this show. Society, American society in general. Not this show.
Well, I once heard someone say that the thriller authors are so happy because they take care of folks in the book. So, but you know, the cool part is I did learn something about mountain climbing. I know that I'm not going to do it. And then I had the nerve to go on YouTube to actually see what is it like to climb Mount Everest. And I realized I do not want to do that. So,
well, maybe that'll help me with climbing these stairs in my 2-story house.
I love the fact that Amanda just had to look it up, which says she's braver than me. I just would go, no.
About the mountain climbing?
No, not my thing.
Yeah, well, she names it. She calls it Manuslu, which I never heard. It's the 8th highest peak in the world. And so you have these people, this person climbing, and they have one of those selfie sticks. And I'm thinking, focus on the mountain, guy. Come on. But I don't know. So I guess that's a road trip. Right. We need to go mountain climbing.
If there's something,
I'll climb a small hill about 10 feet.
There is one other sexy book that came out this month. It's called Seeing Strangers by Sebastian J. Plata, and it was an open relationship thriller.
Ooh, wait. So now we're going to redefine your last recommendation, Amanda, to sexy thriller.
Listen, don't keep putting it on me. This is a recommendation by the panel. I share this with y'all.
That's right. I'm sorry. You know,
and since we're talking about some books that are coming out later on.
Wait, I got a book. I do have a book.
Sorry.
One of my two all-time favorite crime fiction authors, James Lee Burke. Mm-hmm. Every Cloak Rolled in Blood. It's a little bit autobiographical. An 85-year-old writer whose daughter died recently, living in the Bitterroot Valley of Montana, a white supremacist son paints a Nazi swastika on his barn door. Bruce R. confronts the father, and there we begin the plot. So he's suffering from grief from the death of his daughter. He also adds a lot of supernatural elements to it. There's a state police trooper, Ruby Spotted Horse. And when he goes to her house, he hears mysterious sounds in her, not her attic, but her basement. And when he goes to investigate, she says there's nothing really down there. But I don't think this will be revealing too much of a plot. There are ghosts. And it ties around the massacre of an American Indian tribe in that particular area. And it really, this book really is a critique of American imperialism, how we treated Native Americans, our propensity for violence. It also has some drug things in there. So James Lee Burke is very, very overt about his desire to set the record, to share with them his concerns about where this country's going. And he talks a lot about it in our interview. So it's a really, really good novel. His novels, James Lee Burke novels, always make me think about doing the right thing, because his characters always struggle with doing the right thing, trying to do the right thing, though they are always deeply flawed. So I really enjoy reading James Lee Burke novels. So that's his latest one, Every Cloak Rolled in Blood. And James Lee Burke himself is 86 years old, 85 or 86 years old, and has an amazing memory. I'm interviewing him. I said, well, you know, this book reminds me a little bit of Paradise Lost. So, you know, I'm trying to show off remembering John Milton, and, you know, I know just a little bit of literary stuff. And he said, well, actually, Hopeton, my third book was actually based on Paradise Lost. But he was very nice in how he said it. But yeah, anytime you have, you know, great evils and demons, and you're actually literally interacting with some of these ghostly, demonic type characters, then, you know, I kind of go back to Paradise Lost. So there is, you guys know this other author who's actually has a whole series that's really based on Paradise Lost, where the protagonist is a detective named Charlie Parker, mm-hmm. who may or may not be a fallen angel. Do you guys remember the name of that author?
Yeah. John Connolly.
John Connolly, right. So he has a whole series where the detective actually interacts with what is believed to be fallen angels on Earth.
That's cool.
So that's it. That's all I got. You were saying something before I interrupted you, Scott?
Yes, too. Since we are mentioning we're going to be, I guess, off the air for a little while.
Let me make that announcement. We're going to be off the air for a little while. Okay, go ahead. For 3 months, we'll be back in September, but we first should announce that we have a forthcoming book, Austin War, edited by Molly O'Dense, Scott Montgomery, and Hopeton Hay. And Molly O'Dense was really the mastermind in pitching it to Johnny Temple and invited Scott Montgomery and myself along for the ride. And Amanda Moore has a short story in this book. Molly O'Dense has a short story in this book. Scott Montgomery has a short story in this book. And we have several other authors that are in this book. We don't know exactly when it's coming out, but Austin Noir is forthcoming.
And the publisher is Akashic Books. If you want to take a look and see other books that are similar, they have a wonderful city noir series that goes all over the world. Oh, also, if you're looking for any good summer reading recommendations, check out crimereads.com for our most anticipated list. I put together a list of 130 books.
130. Wow.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and I was about to say there's one other author that's got a book coming out in June that I've been anticipating. I loved it. John Vercher's When the Lights Go Out. He phenomenal author, a young author, and had a great debut. I'm blanking on the title of his first book, unfortunately. It's an MMA fighter who's of mixed race and who is dealing with the brain damage he's had from all of that, and he's also dealing with the dementia that his father is suffering. As he says in one time in the book, he goes, it's like looking in a dark mirror, but he's looking at his father. It's really, really wonderful. But I also want to say, look into Crime Reads, definitely. Also, just check out your local independent bookstores. This is a fantastic, I was looking at June, this May, also August, even July to a certain degree. This is going to be a great summer for this genre. There's just some fantastic writers, some fantastic books coming out.
Yeah.
It's just, I mean, usually we used to do like a top three. It's been difficult for me to go, okay, what are three that I'm going to talk about? Because there's just some great new writers, some great old writers, and just some fantastic ideas that are flying around and coming out. this summer. It's going to be amazing.
And let me add on John Vercher. His first novel was Three Fifths.
That's right.
And he is also of mixed race and does a bit of MMA himself.
Yeah.
And one other thing that's really, really, really important to know about After the Lights Go Out, the dog does not die.
You have to be clear with that. We take our dog seriously. Okay. Yeah.
Well, thanks for listening to Diverse Voices Book Review. Thank you, Molly Odense, Senior Editor of CrimeReads.com. You can go to CrimeReads.com to learn the latest about books coming out. Don't forget to check out her most anticipated list of summer books. Scott Montgomery, Crime Fiction Coordinator, Book People. What's your website, Scott? Where do you want people to go to follow you?
Right now, I'm Man Without a Country, but keep on looking up a thing called The Hard Word. Hopefully, we're going to work out some quirks on that and get it taken care of. So,
and finally, a soon-to-be-published crime fiction writer, Amanda Moore. And you are actually on Twitter now.
Yes, it's at Amore Books. I'm also on Instagram at Amore Books.
Well, thank you so much, everybody, for being, or at least not, you're not really guests. You're really co-hosts of the Crime Fiction Picks of the Month. We will be back in September, but don't forget AkashicBooks.com, Austin Noir. You know, there was a movie starring Burt Lancaster called Valdez is Coming. So Austin Noir is coming. Have a great day. Thank you for listening to Diverse Voices Book Review. I'm Hopeton Hay, host and producer. The theme music is provided by Wright Productions. You can follow the show on social media. Under Facebook and Instagram, it's Diverse Voices Book Review, or Twitter under @DiverseBooksHay.